The following episode of K-Voice recorded at midnight, June 8th, 2018. Things may have changed by the time you listen to this show. Enjoy the show.
K-Voice of Resistance!
Hi, I'm Kelly, and this is K-Voice of Resistance, your friendly neighborhood podcast.
Resist!
We had the biggest primary day of 2018 on Tuesday, and disaster was avoided! Woohoo! Democrats advanced candidates in the California 39, 48, and 49, three Republican-held districts. The California primary was by far the most important House primary this year. See, California has about one-eighth of the 435 seats in the House. 53 total seats. That's the largest share of U.S. House seats. And as they said on the Cook Political Report, of the 53 seats, there were no districts where Democrats will not appear on the fall ballot. Well, there are 10 seats that the GOP will not appear. Haha. So, in all seven, yes, seven, Republican-held California House seats that Hillary Clinton won in the 2016 elections, Democrats will have a candidate. That's a very big deal, particularly when you consider that if Democrats can win five or six of these seats, that amounts to one quarter, or close, of the total 23 seats that they need to win back the majority in November. This means that we still have a chance at the House.
Bafflingly.
At least the media, may have been a bit eager in branding the 2018 midterms as a blue wave. The orange ruffians' approval ratings are ticking up. The generic ballot polls are tightening. And Senate races across the country are shaping up to be much more competitive. As Vox says, quote, "And it looks like we should neither have faith in the blue wave or discredit it. Though it feels like the odds for liberals have gone from overwhelmingly positive to desperate quickly, the reality is a bit duller. As a country, we have in many ways failed to process some of the key lessons of the 2016 campaign. Modest-sized polling errors are common. Events are important to politics, and they are inherently unpredictable. But Democrats retain an edge in the polls, and the results from California continue to suggest that Democrats are modest favorites to win the House majority." Unquote. At the end of 2017, Team Blue held a generic ballot polling 13 points or more advantage. Now, Democrats have an advantage of only about 5.5 points. All this being said, polling is highly inaccurate in House races, and I feel, and I'm not alone in this, that polls are good for no more than tracking trends rather than specifics. And a lot is on the line here. Affordable Care Act and Medicaid, nutrition assistance cuts, and so much more. If Democrats get in, we can provide a check on the rampant corruption oozing out of the Republican administration and work on things like raising the minimum wage and other awesome things. Look, California lost the supermajority this week. We couldn't box out Republicans in the governor's race, and barely one in five voted. Apathy is consent. Apathy is collaboration. This is why we can't have nice things. Arrogant progressives in California stayed home. Listen, I am profoundly baffled by this country, by liberals, how in the face of fascism, people can't bother to show up to the damn polls. It is a frustration large enough to make me want to give up on politics altogether. To give up on caring, which I know for me is absolutely impossible. But still, don't people realize that this...
No namby-pamby, bleeding-heart, left-wing, socialist, political whore.
Probably in as long as I can remember, we have a president who actually fulfilled the promises he made during the campaign. The president was firm.
So, here we are at the one-year anniversary of the Mueller investigation, staffed with the singularly most biased special counsel attorneys in American history. And since then, we have witnessed events unfold, which are so unbelievable, so unimaginable, you'd have to be wearing a tinfoil hat or a card-carrying member of the conspiracy party to even believe it exists. It's time, folks. It's time to shut it down, turn the tables, and lock her up. There is a cleansing needed in our FBI and Department of Justice. It needs to be cleansed of individuals who should not just be fired, but who need to be taken out in handcuffs.
That could be our next Attorney General. Jeanine Pirro, the rabid Trump-worshipping, Mueller probe-eviscerating critter who eats immigrant children for Sunday brunch, and one of the more vile creatures clogging up the airwaves via Trump TV, Fox News. But our wise president has already dangled it before her.
Oh, hell no!
Yeah, that is something that could happen. We never need to lose sight of the fact that things could be worse. Not that she's going to be more racist or evil than Jefferson Bugout Sessions. Of course not. It's hard to get more evil than him. But that would put the Mueller probe seriously in danger. I don't need to tell you all this. You guys know, but things are depressing and scary. But, there are some stand-up things to celebrate. More than 500 women so far have filed to run in primaries this year, a 67% jump from 2016. NBC News and the Associated Press report that of those who were in the primary on Tuesday, at least 59 female candidates, most of them Democrats, all cleared their primary hurdles. And it is history in the making in several races. In New York's first congressional district, Democratic primary winner Deb Haaland would become the first Native American woman in Congress if she wins the open seat vacated by Michelle Lujan Grisham, who won the state's Democratic primary for governor. And Grisham could be the nation's first Latina Democratic governor if she wins the seat vacated by the nation's first Latina Republican governor, Susan Martinez, who is term limited. Grisham is one of four female candidates who advanced Tuesday in governor primaries. Incumbents Kay Ivey of Alabama and Kim Reynolds of Iowa won their Republican primaries, while Representative Kristi Noem became the first woman to be nominated for governor in her state after winning the Republican primary Tuesday night. The open seat for New Mexico's second congressional district is expected to be competitive, but either way, the voters are going to send a woman to Washington. Zidal Torres-Small won the Democratic primary, while Yvette Harrell won the Republican contest. In Iowa's first congressional district, Abby Finkner, age 28, won the Democratic primary challenge to the Republican incumbent, Rob Blum. If elected, Finkner will be the nation's youngest representative. And Native Americans had another success besides New Mexico's Deb Haaland. In Idaho, Paulette Jordan is the Democratic candidate for governor, and she wiped the state's Democratic establishment out of the way. In a country that has been kicking around Native Americans since we got lost and stuck our flag where it didn't belong, in their homeland, it is encouraging to see that Native Americans are competing in a real way in politics. More good news out of the primary. Republican former congressman, who was virulently anti-gay in Kansas, Tom Huelskamp, a Republican, lost in a primary on Tuesday to Roger Marshall, a newcomer. This dude was regularly listed in anti-gay hate groups, including the Family Research Council and the National Organization for Marriage. And in 2013, he attempted to introduce a constitutional amendment to override the court ruling in favor of same-sex marriage. And this family man, this pillar of Christianitude, was arrested earlier this year on charges of sex crimes. And we are not talking he got caught with a prostitute sex crimes. No. That would be adorable. No. As it is, seemingly, the way lately with the GOP, he was charged with 17 alleged child sex offenses, including sexual exploitation of a minor. The investigation is still active, but doesn't matter to us, because he lost. So, yay! A number of LGBTQ candidates won their primary elections. Hashtag progress. LGBTQ rights activist Zach Walls won his primary in Iowa. The 26-year-old is on his way to potentially becoming one of Iowa's youngest political leaders, according to CNN. Last night, Walls won the Democratic primary in Iowa's 37th district, landing almost 60% of the vote. He'll be up against Libertarian Carl Krambach for the Senate seat in November. But according to the Gazette, this specific district is heavily Democratic. Of the 8 states that held primaries Tuesday, Alabama, California, Iowa, and New Jersey had LGBTQ candidates on the ballot. A total of 17 LGBTQ candidates ran, and a number of them racked up big wins. Mark Leno, who is hoping to become the city's first openly gay LGBTQ mayor, as of last night, was 255 votes behind. And State Senator Ricardo Lara is one step closer to becoming California's first openly LGBTQ statewide official, after finishing a narrow second behind Republican Steve Poizner. Due to the state's two-tier primary system, he will now face him in the general election. There's Jimmy Duarte running for Santa Cruz County Supervisor in Alabama. Neil Rafferty is headed for a runoff election in the race for the House District 54 to replace Patricia Todd, in which he is facing off against Jacqueline Gray Miller. Todd was the first openly gay lawmaker in Alabama, and she has endorsed Rafferty. Everything about that sentence is weird. Mainly because all of that was in Alabama. Jennifer Campbell for San Diego City Council, Sabrina Cervantes for California Assembly, Mark Takano for U.S. House of Representatives, and best news of all, to me at least, is Joy Silver for California State Senate, who I work for.
Are we rising up?
Yeah!
Are we fighting back?
Yeah!
We are, we are. Wow, what a crowd. What a crowd, huh? It's amazing. This has been an amazing time walking out of the resistance and onto the political dance floor. And if anybody knows me, they know I love a good dance floor. Is that right?
So I am in it till November. We have an uphill climb, being that it is a Republican district and we're running against an incumbent, but I feel good. And working on the campaign feels good. And everyone should be doing what they can from now till November, not just to save our stupid country, but because it feels good, you know? We can be happy about these LGBTQ wins, or at least almost wins. But this comes in the wake of the Supreme Court's narrow ruling that ruled in favor of the bigoted cake maker. And we need to be clear. The cake maker ruling, this is the ruling that allowed, the assholes to refuse service to a gay couple. But that ruling did not say that business people were free to discriminate. The Supreme Court reversed the decision in the masterpiece Cake Shop v. Colorado Civil Rights Commission based on concerns specific to the case. The court did not rule that the Constitution is allowing bigots free reign over being assholes to whoever they please. That being said, it throws even more uncertainty on the future of gay rights in America. And already, an East Tennessee hardware store owner,
bigot,
decided to express his beliefs following the Supreme Court's ruling by putting up a sign that reads, "No gays allowed.
Asshole."
His name's Jeff Amex, who owns Amex Hardware and Roofing Supplies in Granger County. Be sure to leave him a review. So he added the "No gays allowed" sign on Monday because gay and lesbian couples are against his religion.
Zealot. Asshole.
And he said this, quote, "They gladly stand up for what they believe in. Why can't I? They believe their way is right. I believe it is wrong. But yet, I'm going to take more persecution than them because I'm standing for what I believe in." Unquote. It's not a belief, asshole. Gay people are gay at birth, you bigot. And I'm sick and tired of these Christians crying religious persecution. You are on the damn money. You are in the courthouses. You are just about every president. You're basically the entire damn government. You are a supermajority in the United States. You are doing just fine.
For the first time ever, the once Christian nation that was the United States of America makes the list, the top 12 worst Christian persecution nations in the world.
Just this week, a California man was sentenced to death and his wife to a lifetime prison sentence for torturing her young son to death. He was 8. They tortured him for years because they thought he was gay. In Boston, after a woman kissed her girlfriend, they were attacked by a man yelling slurs at them and beat them to a pulp, fracturing one's cheekbone and more. This week is Pride Month in Boston, and the women say they are going with renewed purpose. And the Salt Lake City Tribune reported that 4 men who attended a pride parade in Salt Lake City were chased by a mob of white men yelling racial and homophobic slurs. They were all late teens, early 20s, clean-cut, typical blondie, blue-eyed, tiki torch kind of guys. Wholesome Utah boys, you know the type. The men ran into a local dessert shop, scared and breathless, and the employee, Terrence Mannery, immediately locked the store door and jumped in to fight the mob off. That guy was a real hero. And all this was this week. And that was like a 5-minute internet search of mine. So who knows what else was there. So you bigoted white asshole and all American Christians who whine that you are persecuted, you are not.
Worst Christian persecution nations in the world.
Get over yourselves. You're not that special. Okay, let's shift gears.
Racism.
Have you donated to the ACLU recently? The ACLU is busy. In a naked act of discrimination, Donald and his racist creatures infesting Washington are including a citizenship question in the 2020 census, which will depress the response rate, which will decrease the political power in places with a lot of immigrants. I don't think this is not intentional. So, on Wednesday, our friends at the American Civil Liberties Union sued Donald's administration. The ACLU contends that the new question violates the Census Bureau's constitutional mandate to count every person in America accurately, regardless of citizenship. According to Mother Jones, the census determines how $675 billion in federal funding is allocated to states and localities, how many congressional seats and electoral votes states receive, and how voting districts are drawn. If many immigrants don't respond to the census because they fear that reporting themselves as non-citizens could cause them to be deported, that would shift economic and political power to whiter and more Republican areas. As it is, in 2010, the census failed to count 1.5 million people of color while overcounting white Americans. That discrepancy will explode under Donald, whose administration has targeted immigrant communities and denied critical resources to the Census Bureau. And then,
the Homeland Security Act of 2002 takes the next critical steps in defending our country. The continuing threat of terrorism, the threat of mass murder on our own soil, will be met with a unified, effective response.
DHS, the governmental agency that has no reason to exist, says, quote, DHS does not currently have a policy of separating women and children. However, we retain the authority to do so in certain circumstances, particularly to protect a child from potential smuggling and trafficking activities. We ask that members of the public and media view advocacy group claims that we are separating women and children for reasons other than protect the child with the level of skepticism they deserve, unquote. They said that in an email to NPR. Which is BS. The good news? The ACLU is on the case. The ACLU requested class action status on Friday, expanding an existing lawsuit against Donald's administration filed on behalf of an anonymous asylum seeker from the Democratic Republic of the Congo, who was allegedly detained for months, more than 2,000 miles away from her 7-year-old daughter. And on Wednesday, a judge denied the government's request to dismiss the suit. On Tuesday, the United Nations Human Rights Office urged Donald's administration to put an end to this outrageous policy. Because we need to be policed. I argue we always needed to be policed, but at least now more than ever. Okay, let's check in with Congress. See, traditionally, both members of Congress spend an entire month of August on recess to give them ample opportunity to focus on the work in their states and districts and campaign during election years. However, Senate Majority Leader Turtle McConnell
asshole
has canceled the majority of August recess, stating, quote,
I've canceled the August recess. We have a lot of important work to do. As a result of unprecedented obstruction, for example, we've had 100 cloture votes in the first 2 years of this president, only 24 cloture votes in the first 2 years of the last six presidents on nominations. Just to sum it up, I think we have enough work to do for the American people that we should be here during these weeks. I hope we'll get greater cooperation, but everybody should anticipate that we will be here as I announced today.
Okay. McConnell's statement is ridiculous. For many reasons. But firstly, Republicans have enough votes in the Senate to pass the nominations without a single vote from the Democrats. Not only is blaming the Democrats for quote-unquote historic obstruction a false statement, a lie, it is also exceptionally rich coming from the senator solely responsible for blocking the confirmation of Merrick Garland.
Hypocrite.
Historic obstruction, my ass. Secondly, it has been made clear by Senate Republican leaders that canceling the August recess would hurt 2018 midterm campaigns of vulnerable Senate Democrats. And make no mistake, Mitch McConnell did not cancel recess to pass appropriations bills. He canceled it to continue packing the federal judicial system with unfit right-wing extremists nominated by Donald to impact the midterm elections by hurting Democratic Senate candidates. In 2017, McConnell canceled the first 2 weeks of August recess in order to take another shot at repealing the Affordable Care Act. When this attempt failed, the cancellation was slimmed down to 1 week. This time, McConnell is likely looking to cut a deal with Democratic senators up for re-election. Vote yes on a long list of Trump's judicial nominees, and you get your recess back into the campaign. Using our judiciary system for political gamesmanship is shameful. Senators must take their time to properly vet nominees and not simply rubber stamp them. Especially these scandal-ridden creatures put forth by Donald's administration. And canceling August recess is also unfair to constituents who deserve the opportunity to meet with and hear from their senators. This week, the House voted on H.R. 3, Spending Cuts to Expired and Unnecessary Programs Act. Passed 210 to 206. They rescinded $15 billion in budget authority that federal agencies aren't currently using, which is dumb. The problem is, while this money is not being used, circumstances could change, and then they'll have to go back to Congress and ask for that money to deal with the problem. And you know how hard next to impossible that'll be. The larger cuts were $5.1 billion from the Children's Health Insurance Fund, CHIP. This money was allocated in 2015, and yeah, has gone unused. The only good news here, as a result, is CBO estimates that this will have no impact on enrollment. For now, they cut $4.3 billion from the Department of Energy's Advanced Technology Vehicles Manufacturing Loan Program. It would effectively eliminate the program. $1.9 billion from Child Enrollment Contingency Fund, $800 million from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Innovation Account, $499 million from the Department of Agriculture's Farm Security and Rural Investment Programs Account, $220 million from the Department of Health and Human Services Non-Reoccurring Expense Fund, $160 million from DOE's Title 17 Innovative Technology Loan Guarantee Program, which would eliminate the program, $141 million from the Treasury Department's Capital Management Fund, which provides funding to housing nonprofits and community development financial institutions to finance affordable housing projects, $132 million from the Railroad Retirement Board's Railroad Unemployment Insurance Extension Benefits Payments Account, and $106 million from the Department of Justice's Assets Forfeiture Fund. We have a call to action.
Call to action.
Call to action.
Call to actions.
Calls to actions.
Call to action.
Okay, you guys have heard about all this ZTE stuff, right? Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross announced that the U.S. government struck a deal with the Chinese government to levy a $1 billion fine against ZTE, plus requiring the 400 be held in an escrow account and ZTE replace its top management. And Congress needs to act immediately. On May 10th, an Indonesia developer secured a $500 million loan from the Chinese government to build a resort called Lido City, which will include Trump-branded hotels, a golf course, and residences. Within 72 hours, Donald announced via a tweet that he plans to remove sanctions from Chinese telecom company ZTE. See, sanctions were applied in 2017 after ZTE admitted to violating U.S. embargoes to Iran and North Korea and misleading investigators. In April, 1 year after their admission of guilt, ZTE was found in violation of the terms of their legal settlement, forcing the Commerce Department to apply additional 7-year ban on the sales of American supplies to ZTE. However, on May 25th, Donald's administration formally announced a plan to reverse course on the sanctions. This sequence of events raises glaring concerns that the Chinese government paid a massive bribe that would benefit Donald. And in return, Donald would ignore the findings of the U.S. government and change the American trade policy to help the Chinese. Not to mention, Ivanka got a bunch of patents for the deal. And in addition to shady business dealings with the Pentagon, has such strong concerns that ZTE equipment could be used to track or snoop on service members who use their devices, they have deemed use of their devices as an unacceptable security risk and banned them. While Congress is working to enact several pieces of legislation that will limit the president's ability to carry out the promise of lifting the ban on ZTE, and to shore up telecommunication security, they're doing little to examine the troubling implications that arise from Donald's actions.
Corruption.
Encourage your representative to support legislation that keeps the ZTE ban in place to protect our security interest and to investigate the connection between Chinese loans and Donald's abrupt change in policy towards ZTE. Call your representatives now. Okay. Before I go, one small bit of good news. Being the first state to do so, California just approved LGBTQ inclusive history books for primary schools. Yay! Two other textbooks were rejected as they did not include LGBTQ history and were in violation of the state's 2011 Fair Education Act. Yay, California! And these things are possible because people voted. Okay. Thank you guys for sticking with me on this episode of K, Voice of Resistance. You can stream or download the show at crabdiving.com under the K Voice tab or on your favorite podcasting app. Follow me on Twitter at Kelly the Voice or on Facebook, where you'll find all the stories I have discussed on this show and more at K, Voice of Resistance. If you want to laugh and rage at your liberal progressive news, I suggest checking out the Crab Diving Podcast with Patrick Vile and comedian Ryan Fiverr. 2 hours a day, Monday through Friday. All right, take care of yourselves out there. And as always, resist.
Resist! This is the